C-O-L-O-N-E. Today is December the 7th, 1999, and I'm at the home of Don Oman, O-M-A-N, 236 Ricardo, Mill Valley. Don, I'm going to ask you a bit about your early years. Where and when were you born?
I was born in Seattle, Washington, June 27, 1915. I went to school in Seattle to the University of Washington. When I finished at the university, I was fortunate enough to get I was hired in Seattle to fill a job in San Francisco. So that is how I happened to come to San Francisco from Seattle in 1937.
Okay, can you tell me a little bit, going back to Seattle, about your parents, their names, and how big was your family, and a little bit about your neighborhood?
Yeah. My father's name was Levi C. Oman, and my mother's name was Lori Oman. I had two younger brothers. We lived in a modest, middle-class neighborhood, the Wallingford District in Seattle, about a mile east of the campus of the University of Washington, and within walking distance to the Interlake Grade School and the Alexander Hamilton Middle School and the Lincoln High School that I attended while I was in Seattle.
How did your parents happen to come to Seattle?
My father came to Seattle in about 1900 with his father had died, and his mother and four or five children. No, much more than that, I guess maybe seven children. And one of my father's uncles led a party from the Midwest to Seattle, and they got established in the Ballard District of Seattle, Scandinavian District, and settled, and they were poor people. They managed there were a bunch of tradesmen in the group that came west in the party that my father was in. He was just a little kid, and they built some housing and settled in there.
And your mother?
My mother was born in a town in northwest Washington State, and she was brought up in Kitsap County in a little town called Silverdale. Her father had homesteaded. My grandfather, Charles E. Greaves, had homesteaded 40 acres in this little community. He cut down the trees and established a small farm there. She grew up on the farm. She was the first girl from her community to go to high school in Burlington, Washington. She subsequently had training for a year or two at Bellingham Normal School so she would be qualified to teach. And she did teach school for a year or two in a little one-room school house in Kitsap County.
And then at some point she moved to Seattle. Was that before or after she met your father?
He was working. He got a job working at a hardware store in Bremerton, not far from the town of Silverdale. And one of his friends invited him to go to my grandfather's farm on an occasion when they were having a corn. What do they call it, a corn roasting party or something of the sort, anyway. And Dad's friend had been asked to bring anybody along that he wanted to. Dad went along and met my mother, and that was the beginning of a long friendship. It was some years before they got married, but that was how they got started.
Let's see, you came to Marin County what year?
In 1937.
And what brought you here?
On the campus at the university, I had, during the time I was in school, I worked on the campus humor magazine called Columns, and as a result of that experience, selling advertising and helping to get the magazine out, I was hired in Seattle by Miller Freeman Publications, who had an office in San Francisco. It developed that they had an opening for a young man in San Francisco, and the president of the company, the vice president of the company, was a friend of my father's. I managed to get an interview, and on the strength of my experience at school, I was hired on a tentative basis for this job in San Francisco, with the understanding that they'd pay my way down. We'd try it for 3 months. If they liked me and I liked them, I'd stay on. Otherwise, they'd bring me home, pay my expenses home, no hard feelings. Luckily, and I stayed, and I worked there.
So when you came
they
down?
Were publisher, they were publishers of trade publications, business magazines, in various industrial fields.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So when you came to San Francisco to work, you decided you were going to live in Marin County?
Yes. I teamed up with a couple of other fellows who were working for the same company I was with, and one of their friends. Four of us came to Mill Valley and located a little one-room shack in the 500 block on Lovell Avenue. Next door to what was then the Ed Bullard family. Ed had established his Bullard Manufacturing Company in Sausalito, making hard hats for workers. I think that he had the contract to supply hard hats for all of the men that needed it for the building of the Golden Gate Bridge, for example. They were a very nice family, and the little place that we rented, the four of us, shared the monthly rent of $25. When we looked at the place, it was one room, it had a deck, and it had an alcove for a kitchen sink and a hot plate or two, and the bathroom consisted of a washroom and toilet. We needed a shower. It was a place owned by Tom and Miller Logan, who lived down on Throckmorton below us, and Bella agreed to put in a shower for us, but she did, consisting of there was a cold water pipe outside of the end of the building. She had a pipe attached to that and into the bathroom, and got a galvanized wash tub, put it on the floor, drilled a hole through it and the floor, and that was the drain, and put a ring holder at the top for a curtain, and we had nice cold showers there all year long.
So, well, in spite of the difficult living conditions and long commute, there was something that must have attracted you about Mill Valley to put up with all that.
Right. Our next door neighbors, the Bullards, of course, made life very pleasant for us. They had a tennis court. They had a swimming pool.
Oh.
They had two attractive young daughters. And they let us swim and they let us play tennis. And,
uh-huh.
and so that part of
that
it was very good. I was struck by the informality of the people that I saw and met in Mill Valley. Very hang loose, some of the our neighbors when they went shopping, they wear jeans and chambray shirts, and very very informal. Nobody seemed to be pulling rank on anybody else just because they might have some money.
Mm-hmm.
And that was an important factor, I think. And of course, Mill Valley is a very beautiful place, and it was a wonderful starting place for hiking on the mountain and enjoying the outdoors.
So you've enjoyed that as you've lived here.
For many years, right.
Now, at what point did you meet your wife?
She had gone to the university, she was born and raised in Seattle and had gone to the University of Washington, where her father was a professor in the English department for many years, a very wonderful guy, a Rhodes Scholar. Mm-hmm. And he had worked out an exchange with some University of California professor for a summertime exchange of summer school teaching.
Mm-hmm.
And Agnes came with the family down there, and when they went back to Seattle, she decided to stay in San Francisco, where she got a job at Newbegin's Bookstore on the square in on Union Square. One evening I was dating a girl from the University of Washington who was down here visiting her mother, and we went to the dancing at the Fairmont Hotel, and in intermission we went into the bar, and Agnes recognized another University of Washington, or my date recognized Agnes as another University of Washington girl, and they got talking, we got introduced, and that was the beginning of our acquaintance.
Uh-huh.
We were married in 1939 and rented a little $25 a month cottage up or shack on I think it was 333 Molino Avenue over on the wooded side of the canyon.
Mm-hmm.
And we're there for about a year or year or two, and then moved into the city.
Oh.
For a year or something like that, I guess, before the war came along.
Mm-hmm.
When that happened, I quit my job and went back to Washington, D.C. to work for the War Production Board, or Food Production Board, or something of the sort, and for a year before I went into the service in the Navy.
Uh-huh. So you worked for the government then in Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
for about a year, and
then
you went to the Navy?
Going back to Mill Valley in the late 30s, I commuted to the city. I took the train from Mill Valley to Sausalito and got on the ferry and went to town. The bridge had been completed a year or so before I got down here.
Mm-hmm.
Occasionally we would drive to work
mm-hmm.
in one of the fellow's cars, but for the most part, it would be by train and ferry. And I think it took no longer to go to work that way than it is to drive into town to go to work today
uh-huh.
because of the traffic situation.
Uh-huh. So, how long would it take if you commuted over the bridge in a car back in those days?
It would take about half an hour.
Half an hour,
So, it was a pleasant way of getting to work. Both of my brothers were in the Navy, so when it came time for me to go into the service, I requested the Navy duty. I was just a plain old sailor boy. First of all, they put me in the CDs, and then later on transferred me to the regular Navy, where I served for a while in Norfolk, Virginia, at a supply depot there. And then the Navy found out that the Army and the Marines each had combat correspondence. Enlisted combat correspondence, writing mostly stories about for hometown newspaper consumption about the men in the other men in the service and what they were doing and so forth. So it was one of the first times I think the Navy ever scanned its personnel and picked out people who were experts in the field and gave them work in that line instead of making me out to be a carpenter or something of the sort when I didn't know anything about that. So anyway, I was in the first group of about 25 sailors. Newspapermen, radio men, this is before TV was important, magazine people, professional journalists of all kinds, and sent us out into the Pacific. I served aboard the old battleship New York, which was Queen of the Fleet in World War I, and I was a boarder in World War II.
Wow. Where all did that take you?
Well, primarily, the main experience was going into Okinawa about D-Day minus five and bombarding the area where our boys were going to go ashore. And then we stayed there for about 3 months, which is one of the longest naval engagements to that time in naval history. And then we went on to the Philippines in preparation for the invasion of Japan, which was canceled after the bomb was dropped. And So I came back to Pearl Harbor, and the scuttlebutt was that the ship was going to go back out and patrol the Indochina coast for the next year, and I didn't want any more of that, so I big-dealed myself a transfer to the submarine service. And since I was there, as the war ended, and they put us to work writing Now It Can Be Told stories about where we used the actual name of the ship and so forth, and about some of the exploits of the submarines during the war. And after a few months of that, I got on a flip of a coin, I got a berth on a submarine sleeping on an empty torpedo rack, which is like a ladder with curved steps on it, and got a ride back to the States. And within a few months I was discharged and went back to work for the same company that I'd worked for before.
What year would that have been?
That would have been about 1945.
Uh-huh. before the war was over, or?
About the time, no, the war had ended. The war had ended. We were unable to find a place to live in Mill Valley, and we used the GI Bill to buy a little place in Larkspur for $6,000, and we lived there for 5 years.
Mm-hmm. By that time, you were raising a family?
Yeah. Two daughters. Lori is the younger of the two. She was born in July of 1946. Francie was born while I was in the service. She was born in December 30th, 1943. Agnes was one of the founders of the cooperative nursery school in the Larkspur Cordova area, and was a year or so ago when they had their 50th anniversary of the nursery school. Agnes was honored at their event as one of the founding mothers of that.
What are your daughters doing today?
One of them is Francie's living in the East Bay, and she's doing some commercial video work and doing some private coaching, counseling service for people who need help organizing their business offices, that mm-hmm. type of thing.
Does she have a family?
She has one son.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. He's about 27.
Mm-hmm.
Laurie lives in San Rafael. She has two children, Zachary, who's 25 or 6, something like that. He's in New York, interested in theatrical matters. Has appeared in a couple of independent films and has been doing some writing and directing. Laurie's daughter, Raina, graduated in business school up at the Chico's and has been working for the last several years as a salesperson for a major office supply firm in Sacramento.
Mm-hmm.
So they're both pretty well started on their careers.
Yeah. Let's see, after you came back from the war and set up residence in Larkspur for a while, at what point did you move to Mill Valley?
Well, we moved to Mill Valley in 1951. We were looking for a place. I remember the real estate chap, Ted, somebody or other, took us around to see various places. And when he mentioned that there was one place for sale up on Lovell Avenue, well, I knew Lovell Avenue from the old days. Mm-hmm. So I said, well, let's go look at it. And it was pouring rain. And he drove us up the driveway to the parking area by the house. And I said, I'll take it. Well, my reactions were just very favorable. I was being funny because I didn't know how much it would cost. I didn't know whether we could afford it or whether we could pay for it or what. But we fell in love with it, and we were able to make an arrangement to buy it. It was an interesting old place. It was built in 1903 by Dr. Proctor and his wife. I think he was an optometrist in the city. And it was an interesting little place, a three-story brown shingle Victorian.
Mm-hmm.
And since it was built when it was in 1903, it had its choice of locations in Mill Valley. It had a smashing view of the mountain, and it had a nice view across Cascade Canyon, and it was really, it was about, well, 3/4 of an acre of land.
Exactly where was it located?
It was located at 338 Lowell Avenue.
And?
We lived there for 42 years.
Wow. Did you have some interesting neighbors during those years?
Yes. One was Dr. Weiss, who lived next door. He built the first tennis court in downtown Mill Valley, where the tennis club is now.
Down by Boyle Park.
And eventually, although I think that there was conflict between him and the people who started the Mill Valley Tennis Club. Eventually, his court was incorporated and was the other. He had a small swimming pool there at his house, which was interesting in two specific cases. One, in the big fire of 28 or 29, the fire came roaring down toward toward Lowell Avenue, and he and other neighbors took gunny sacks and blankets and soaked them in his tub, came over, climbed up on our roof, and put out the embers as they were falling on the shingles and kept and saved our house from burning down. Mm. One other thing about that place, it was eventually purchased by Keith Cook and his wife, and when the old Redwood Richardson Bay Bridge was torn down, there were piles of old planks down there, and from the surface of the bridge, and they had about 2 inches of tar and gravel on the top of them.
Mm-hmm.
I remember going down with him and with a truck and bringing back planks, and he had a workshop with saws, and he put these planks through the saws, and cut off all the tar, and then he had beautiful straight grain redwood, which he cut up into 2x4s, and made himself a wonderful redwood deck around the pool,
uh-huh,
which exists there today.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
A word or two about the house, perhaps our house at 338. It was built in part with hand-fashioned square nails.
Mm-hmm.
When we did some repair work on it, we found some of these, and I saved some of them just for mementos.
Yeah.
It had a... The garage had space for one car in the basement area, off the parking turnaround at the top of the driveway, and it was counterbalanced by a box on the side wall, which had old iron window sash weights and sand to counterweight and worked on the pulley so that it's possible manually to open the door and close it. Eventually we got an automatic.
Yeah.
In the basement we found some old kerosene lamps, and we're told that later, while we were living there, that in the old days, people would take these lamps down to the depot and hang them on hooks outside, and then when they came home at night, it was dark, but they'd get their lantern and light it and walk on home using it as light for their walking trip. But
these were the commuters.
Dr. Proctor, the man who built the house, we were told had an electric car that he used to either for commuting or going down to the
An electric car.
Electric car. Yeah. Here we are now. What, 50, 60, almost 100 years later, and people are talking about electric cars again.
Uh-huh.
The house had a big rock wall holding up the driveway. The driveway was almost the complete the whole width of the lot.
Mm-hmm.
And the house was built up, 10, 15 feet above the level of the street.
Mm-hmm.
And shortly after we moved in there, we got a letter from the city telling us that the rock wall was leaning badly and needed to be fixed, and please fix it. So we got an engineer, Frank somebody, who had his office at 90 Throckmorton Street, where we years later had our business office, and he came up with a plan of putting in some steel H-beams vertically on the outside with cables tying back into a cubic yard of cement blocks mm-hmm. under the driveway. That worked fine for a few years. Pointed out that it was still leaning and dangerous, and that we didn't have to fix it, and if we didn't, why, they'd come up with a bulldozer and take it out and send us a bill. We had learned from Dr. Weiss that at the time, in the early 30s, Lovell Avenue had been widened, and in the process, the work was done by the WPA, which was an agency established by the federal government in the Depression to give work to people who were out of work. And this was one of the first such projects in Marin County.
Well, that's interesting to me.
At the time that the street was widened, a wall was built by the WPA along the street in front of our property, mm-hmm. holding up our driveway,
mm-hmm.
and it had been built there for. It had been built on city property, and the city had contracted to maintain the wall. Well, it took us about a year of research to get confirmation of this from newspaper articles, and Mill Valley articles, mm-hmm. and Sandra Fell paper articles. We even wrote to Washington, D.C. and got tape of early WPA records. It turned out that the Mill Valley City Hall had records of everything, just about everything, from downtown on Lovell Avenue up to just about our place, and then the records got lost.
Wow.
We got enough evidence and submitted it to the city, and the city said, well, I guess it's ours.
Mm-hmm.
So they agreed to go ahead and build it, but they needn't build it high, as high as it was needed for the driveway. So we made it, you know, they would build it, they'd pay for the cost of building it up, say, 10 feet. But if they needed 4 more feet up the top, then we would pay for that extra top part, and we agreed to put up the right kind of a redwood railing and to pave the driveway, et cetera, et cetera. And so the job was done.
Yeah.
Well, that's the
little history on that
history
house.
Of that house for Mill Valley, yeah.
Well, tell me about the job you were commuting to from this house.
Miller Premium Publications had a series of trade journals. When I went to work for them in 1937, they had about a dozen employees in the San Francisco office. I read in the paper not too long ago that as a result of various mergers, et cetera, there are now 1,000 people in the San Francisco office of Miller Freeman.
And what were you doing in the office at that time?
I worked on two regional food publications. One was the baking industry magazine, and one was one called Western Canada and Packer, which dealt with processed fruits and vegetables. And I worked on Western Canada and Packer before the war. After the war, I came back and I worked on the baking publication. Then I became advertising manager for the two publications. And eventually I got an idea for a regional publication in the meat field. And my original thought was that I would get the company to publish it and let me manage it. They were giving me three management of three publications instead of just two, and there would be a chance for me to increase my income. But after exploring the idea for a year or so and deciding that it was a good idea, I thought, well, if I have to do most of the work on it, I might as well be crazy enough to start it on my own, which is what I did in 1955.
Uh-huh.
And we had an office in San Francisco for a while, and then in 1957, Dr. Rodney Hartman, one of the main doctors in Mill Valley at the time, who had offices in the Keystone Building, 90 Throckmorton. He had a series of 6 or 7 rooms up there, and he moved out. He teamed up with some others and built a professional building out there, the Safeway store.
Mm-hmm.
And his rooms became available for rent at about the same price we were paying for two rooms in San Francisco. So we rented them and moved our business to Mill Valley.
Well, that was really convenient
for you. In 57. So
yeah.
We were about 3 minutes from home. And
great, yeah.
No more. That incidentally, when I first came to Mill Valley, there was a tea room on the second floor there. Up in part of the area where we subsequently had our business offices.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So you started in college with a humor magazine, yeah. And you ended up with your own publishing company. That's something
right.
To be proud of. Well, let's get on to the Mill Valley memories. I'm sure you have a lot of them. You moved here in 1938, so I'm going to let you take it from there.
Well, there were a few, I've already mentioned commuting on the train and the ferry. One thing I remember is that a Chinese laundry in the basement of an old Victorian house on Bernard and Lovell Avenue. I think it's painted yellow. It's an interesting old Victorian.
Oh, yes, uh-huh.
And there was a Chinese laundry in the basement there. And when we were batching up on Lovell Avenue, once a week we take our shirts and and stuff down. And as I recall, we could fill a pillowcase full of stuff and get it all washed for a dollar.
Uh-huh.
And across the street from that, there was an empty lot, and the doctor, the dentist, Danford, Dr. Danford, built a nice office building for himself, a small office building.
This is downtown?
Downtown, uh-huh. On the corner of Bernard and Lovell Avenue, across the street from this big Victorian house.
Mm-hmm.
And he planted a row of liquid ambar trees on Lovell Avenue along his property there,
mm-hmm.
Which are still there and very pretty in the fall.
Yeah.
His building's long gone. Somebody bought the property, tore it down, and built an apartment there.
Mm-hmm.
One of the main places downtown in those days was for a place to eat or to get ice cream and milkshakes was Espostis, which was taken over by Sal Aversa and his wife in about 1957 or 8 along in there, and they established their Italian restaurant there.
La Ginestra.
La Ginestra, yeah. And then let's see, Dowd's, where the Dowd's youth furniture store place is,
mm-hmm.
downtown now, set back
mm-hmm.
100 yards from Throckmorton. It's now an empty lot, but there used to be a building there where the Dowds lived. They lived upstairs, and they had, in the early days, they had room for their horses down below.
Uh-huh.
They used to, I think, sell and deliver coal in horse and wagon. I remember talking with old Mr. Dowd one time. He told me that I think his father had started the business, and he was carrying it on. But he'd been born in that building.
Wow.
He told them about how they used to take their horses up Lovell Avenue and up the end of the canyon and turn them loose to go feed on the grass up on the hillside. This is before there were many trees on the hillside. There were always, I guess, redwoods,
mm-hmm.
redwoods on the shady side of Cascade, but it was open on the other side. There was a bakery just about on Miller, just about next door to where Starbucks coffee shop is today. The Starbucks corner on the corner of Throckmorton and Miller. Used to be a mayor's department store.
I remember, I don't think that's Starbucks now. I think Starbucks is over in Strawberry.
Maybe so.
And that was that's a different coffee shop, but I can't think of the name right offhand. I can't think of what it is.
A coffee shop.
Yeah, right? It's one of many.
But anyway, it was a mayor's, or Albert's, I guess it was, a dry goods department store there, where my wife used to be able to go in, and she said, you used to be able to buy a spool of thread in Novella. You can't do that anymore.
Yeah.
They're all the boutiques downtown
mm-hmm.
today.
Mm-hmm.
But Larry Mayer was one of the sons of the original, Larry Mayer, I think, married one of the Albert girls.
Mm-hmm.
And he was in the business for a while, but he decided he didn't like it. And so he went back to school and became an attorney and opened offices in the Keystone Building on Throckmorton, where he had his office for quite a while. Let's see. We used to buy eggs at a deli where the Mount Carmel salvage shop is.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
At one time, there was a deli up in there that where we could buy eggs, and I think it was the business that subsequently moved over near the theater on Throckmorton, the movie theater, as Sonapa Farms.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh.
And which became a restaurant, and
it's now Noah's Bagels, I think.
Maybe so.
Yeah.
Let's see. There were a couple of beer parlors in town. One where the Mill Valley Market Wine Department is now.
Uh huh.
And then there was another one on the corner of Bernard and Bernard Miller and Throckmorton, across the street from the Keystone Building. There's been a series of restaurants in there in recent years, but they were the two. The 2 a.m. club down in the Locust area on Miller.
Mm-hmm.
They were the three places where you could go get beer or a drink. One of the more interesting people in Mill Valley in the early days was Maggie Grant. That may have been in the 50s. She had I think she was the first one to have a bookstore in the depot. Very well educated woman. She was married to a State Department diplomat, and she had developed a good business there on books, and eventually retired, and they went up to Elk,
mm-hmm.
California on the coast, and mm-hmm. bought a little inn and ran that for a number of years. I'm trying to think of other early businesses there. That's all that comes to mind at the moment.
I guess when you first came to Mill Valley, it was shortly before the Treasure Island World's Fair. Was that something you attended?
Oh, yes. Yeah, we used to go over there. I remember going over there it was quite an exciting sort of a place. A lot of bright colored lights and a lot of show stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I remember going over there. Benny Goodman and his band came out and played there, and the dance floor would be jammed. And then when he really got going, the dancers all crowded up around the stage.
Uh-huh.
And to listen to the band, and just sort of kind of a trance listening to that swing music.
Oh, yeah, it was wonderful.
Wonderful in those days.
How long did the World's Fair run?
I don't know, at least a year.
Mm-hmm.
They had one of the other features was a Billy Rose Aquacade. He had a bunch of swimmers that did fancy swimming and you might say dancing in the water.
Yeah, like water ballet.
That was a very popular thing. Gypsy Rose Lee, the fan dancer, she was quite an attraction over there. And then they had all kinds of exhibits and buildings and so forth.
From all over the world that participated. So that sounds like a pretty exciting time. Well, at some point during your career, you must have moved from Proctor, the Proctor house, or was that after you retired?
That was we moved here over to Strawberry area in about 6 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
The doing a lot of stairs.
Yeah.
On the Avenue, and I loved gardening and do quite a bit of it, but that it was all very, very much hillside gardening, and so we finally decided that as we got older that we better look for a one-story house on a level lot, and we managed to find one in Strawberry. So we still have a Mill Valley address.
Mm-hmm.
But this fits our needs now.
Uh-huh. It seems very comfortable. Yeah. And I know among your interests and hobbies that gardening is one of them. Maybe you can tell me about your chrysanthemums, which I hope to see before I leave.
Well, maybe 15 years ago, got interested in I joined the Marine Chrysanthemum Society and began learning how to grow exhibition chrysanthemums. And I've been doing it ever since. I took the tests and eventually became an accredited judge in the National Chrysanthemum Society, and in recent years have been judging chrysanthemum shows in Marin and over in Walnut Creek and in Sacramento.
Mm-hmm.
The three different organizations in this part of the country. It's been a fascinating hobby for me. There are 13 different classifications of chrysanthemums, from the little tiny ones up to the huge plate size.
Yeah.
One.
Yeah.
In more recent years, I have been growing some Japanese style bonsai chrysanthemums.
Oh.
Which with very very small flowers on them, and one advantage is that in a single season you can produce a bonsai with a chrysanthemum, whereas it would take you 4, 5, 6 years or more to do it with a tree or a bush, and so it works faster. But it's a good time consuming gardening hobby for a retired person.
Uh-huh.
It takes a lot of time. I don't know, somebody, a friend of mine said, I should not call it a hobby, I should call it an art form, because it really is.
Oh, I think so, yeah. Sure, you get a lot of satisfaction out of it.
I planted a few fruit trees when we got here, and I grow boysenberries and raspberries and strawberries, and then a few vegetables, tomatoes and beans and peas.
Mm-hmm.
So that we can we can enjoy the flavor. It's not practical in terms of time and energy to produce vegetables instead of buying them, but they do. It's kind of fun, and they do taste better. They do taste better if they're homegrown.
Oh yeah, I definitely agree. Yeah.
Another field of interest that a friend of ours a few years back introduced us to bird watching.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly water birds, so that we have learned to be able to identify practically all of the water birds that you might find here in Northern California.
Mm-hmm. And that includes ducks too?
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Ducks and geese and a lot of shorebirds.
Yeah.
And so that when we go out for a walk along the water, we're looking at a widgeon, or there's some pintails, or there's some ruddy ducks, or there's a
so that instead of, well, there's a lot of birds out there.
Yeah, it makes it that much more interesting. I understand you like to travel.
Yes.
That would be interesting to hear about.
Well, we began traveling back in 1939, I think. It was our first trip to Europe. And we've been fortunate. We've been able to do quite a bit of travel. I tallied up the other day. We had visited 40 different foreign countries.
Wow.
During the years. But we haven't made a trip abroad every year, but almost in the intervening years. And we've been able to return to some of our favorite places. We've been to Italy half a dozen times. We've been to all over Europe and Japan and China and Taiwan and Thailand and Burma and Indonesia and to Turkey and to Cairo and to Morocco and Peru and Ecuador and Costa Rica. And
are you still pretty active in your travels today?
Well, in the last few years, our energy became less and less. We switched over to cruises. So
that's a nice way to go, too.
And we've been to on cruises in the Caribbean, one down the Amazon River to the Caribbean, to Alaska. Last year we took an interesting trip from New York to Montreal.
In the St. Lawrence Waterway?
We took a week's trip up the Columbia River last year.
Yeah.
That was kind of fun. On just a little boat, 70 passengers.
Yeah.
So that, but we're 84 years old now. We're getting, I don't know how many more trips we're likely to have. We may have to settle for things closer to home.
Well, certainly when you're cruising, they make it most comfortable for you. So that's a nice compromise. You still get to change your scenery, get out there. And what are some of your interests right now as far as politics, I understand, is one of them?
Yeah, we consider ourselves to be liberal Democrats. I don't know what liberal means anymore, but we're sort of political news junkies, keeping track of primarily of national politics. At the present time, we're very much impressed by the candidates in the current election, and are following that pretty closely.
Well, with the different news stations, I'm sure it must keep your appetite well satisfied in that area. I guess it would be interesting to know how you feel about Mill Valley today as compared to when you first came here, how things have changed.
Well, I think when I first came here, if I was in downtown Mill Valley and met a friend out in the, walking across the street in the intersection there of Miller and Throckmorton, we could stop in the middle of the town and have a chat, and the occasional car would go around us, and that was okay. But you take your life in your hands if you do try to do that today.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot more places to eat within range of Mill Valley.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of boutiques now in downtown Mill Valley. Marin is an affluent society, and I think that a lot of these boutiques have prospered because of that.
Mm-hmm.
But the there's a lot of more tourists coming in too.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to mention when we first came to Mill Valley, the library was in the old library on Lower Lovell Avenue.
Mm-hmm. The big brick building.
Yeah. And when they announced they had a series of hearings eventually about whether to put the new library in the park. And I was deeply torn in my own feelings about it. I consider myself an environmentalist, and I hated the idea of the park being cut up. I was afraid that the city owned the park.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we got a free lot, we can put the library there. And then after a little while, we got a free lot, we can put a police building there, and
mm-hmm.
then so forth and so on. So I was, by the same token, I felt that it was important for Mill Valley to have a good library. And I think it has today, I think it has one of the best libraries.
Oh, it's pretty
anyway.
Special, isn't it?
Yeah. Anyway, I went down to one of the hearings, and I spoke against putting the library in the park for that reason.
When was this going on?
Oh dear, when that would have... I don't remember, 25? I don't remember how many years. It may have been in the late 50s.
Mm-hmm. Eisenhower was president back then.
Finally the city founders decided that they would, to satisfy those of us who wanted a library, were hesitant about putting it in the, okay, that's all we're going to put in there is the library.
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, that we will acquire other public land somewhere
mm-hmm.
to replace that. And I think they did that. I don't remember where they got it, but I think they did. So that I changed it. And I've been a supporter of the library ever since. I was, for a while, I was on the board of the Friends of the Library.
Mm-hmm.
Mrs. Ullman spent quite a few years as working in as the docent in the history department.
Mm-hmm.
of the history room there. Mm-hmm. And so we consider it sort of the heart of Mill Valley.
Oh yeah. No, that's interesting. We feel that way too. And
yeah.
I guess we owe you a big thanks for doing what you did to make it such a special place where you could enjoy it indoors and outdoors.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
Yeah, it surely is. I guess you've noticed,